Political orientation and the workplace. That might be an interesting topic for today.
Welcome to Coffee with Creamer, where you get to sit down with our host, Dr. Barry Creamer, for a conversation about faith, life, and culture. We'll look at old ideas through a new lens, turn those culture wars on their head, and paint a picture of the way things could be. If you like your thinking deep and your coffee hot, pull up a chair. You're in the right place.
Let me just say, if you hear that and think, well, I'm not even concerned about my workplace, or I don't like work, I don't want to think about it, or I don't have a particular job outside of the home, or whatever, I still think this topic will be worth discussing. Whether you see yourself in a grinding job, or in a career-long occupation, or you work from home, or you're in the gig economy, or you personally claim the recently adopted label, legitimate English term of tradwife, which I had not heard before today, actually. This is the day I'm recording this, is the day that I learned that word. Just in happenstance on the radio on the way into work today. Work, as I was coming into work. Anyway, the conversation is about, I'll say it in the way the title of this article gave it to me. It's the effects of person occupation, political orientation misfit on occupational identification, an experimental study. That's the title of a study that I found myself reading the other day, a few days ago, from the International Association of Applied Psychology. It's a study written by a couple of guys, a couple of scholars, and it's in the sort of open research domain. These articles get written and they're published freely and reproduced freely, and this one I got from researchgate.net. Where I happen to find it on Google. Daisy will create a link so you can get to it. If you want to read the nuances of that particular study, my conversation isn't intended to be just a replication of what the study says, although there is a lot from that study in the conversation, because I'm not a psychologist and I don't know a lot of these details, and I rely on them for the categories they have because I want to speak about it honestly in the terms that they presented. But my bigger question was more fundamental than that. As I was considering a topic for this episode, what we ought to talk about, something I've ignored largely, has to do with the shape of careers, the jobs that people pursue, the things they want to do, which obviously I think about a considerable amount, both because I'm the president of a college and we have students who some have to figure out what they're going to do for a living after they leave the school, and they're worried about it being in this area or that area, this field or that field or whatever. And over time, you begin to realize different people are drawn toward different careers, not just because they have a perfectly transparent call from God to go into it. Some people have that, but some don't. They just pursue things on their own interest. And some people are drawn in those directions, it appears, on the basis of more than just their Christian leanings or their calling, but actually on a sort of political ideology, not because of the political ideology, maybe, but certainly does seem to be related to it. That is, in my experience, watching people choose their careers and end up doing what they do, there does seem to be a correlation between certain industries, or sometimes it's just organizations, or career paths, or specific occupations, or whatever, some political ideology. And of course, that's become more obvious to all of us in the last 10 years or so, when politics have become even more polarized and divisive than they were before. And you know, let's be honest, they were pretty polarized and divisive to begin with, and they've always had a divisive nature to them of one kind or another. So I was thinking about all of that and, you know, why it is that certain careers would sort of automatically lead a person or attract a person who's more liberal, for instance, or more progressive, or on the opposite end, more conservative or libertarian, or whichever term you want to throw on it. And I'll go through some of those terms in a moment. I was thinking about that and in asking some questions about that, meaning doing a little just delving in to see, are there people who've written about this? Is there any intelligent literature about it? Is there any conversation about it that goes beyond just speculation and, you know, the confirmation bias we all have when we find the things we want to find? And I stumbled across this article and this study that was done by a couple of scholars. So in reading that article, I was drawn to another part of the basic question that automatically follows this. And that is, and I've experienced this with some individuals, and that is when you work somewhere, and just think about whether this is true for you or not. I hate to say it, but it might even be true about your home, especially if you view your home as your workplace. But, if you work somewhere and you have in that workplace a very strong sense of identification and shared ideology with the people who are there, then obviously that would be different than if you work in a place where you feel a sense of hostility the moment you walk in the door. There may not even be any actual hostility, but you know what I mean. You sense a certain way you shouldn't talk, or if you do, you anticipate some conflict that will come up because of it. That environment in a workplace would create a different sense of your belonging in that community, or maybe a different sense of stress, even when you do get to leave that environment. Let's say leave from your job and go home, for example. So what I want to do is talk about that question for a moment on the basis of this study, again, from the International Association of Applied Psychology, not on the basis of it, but probably with more background from that study than from anything else. And again, Daisy will link to it so you can go read the study yourself. I think it's worth reading. I found it fascinating myself. So first, I need to clarify some terms so that you know what I mean when I say this, that I don't just want to throw things out generically. You're a conservative in a liberal workplace. Well, what do you mean by that? And so first, let's identify some political orientations that we could talk about. And partially I'm not just doing this as background. I'm not just doing it to be technical. I'm doing it because we're not very precise sometimes. Oh, I'm a conservative. But what exactly do you mean by that, saying you're a conservative? And for some people, you can hear with the language of RINO, for instance, Republican in name only. There are a lot of people I know who would call themselves conservatives, and now they carry the name RINO in most circles where they run because people don't consider them conservative enough, which if you're in a super conservative setting, people wouldn't consider you conservative at all. So I want to just get some of the terms down so that you yourself can settle on saying, well, yeah, I think I am a conservative, or I think I am a neoliberal. In this language, they're going to use the language of neoliberal. I most often mean libertarian by that, but libertarian has become a political party, so that becomes a little misleading also. So I'll follow their lead and use neoliberal for here. And so the basic orientation, political orientation that they looked at was you're either right or left leaning. That's the direction of your political ideology, that you're oriented generally to the right or to the left. What's really funny is that when I said that to you, I moved my left hand when I said right and my right hand when I said left. But, you know, I teach, and so very often my crowd's on the opposite side. I'm going to excuse it with that, even though it was clearly just wrong. Anyway, you probably wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't drawn attention to it, but I thought I should. The basic orientation to the right, which is now on my left, is conservative or neoliberal. Those are the two terms they gave it. And by conservative, and I think this is a pretty good definition, a pretty good statement of it, by conservative, they mean people who are generally more, this is, I think, a commonly used definition, people who are generally more likely to accept social inequality and resist social change. And that's not said in a sense of, well, they're more likely to accept injustice. It's not said with that kind of slant to it or bias to it. It's simply making the point that I've been a conservative most of my life, and I would have agreed with this completely in exactly the wording that it stated. Meaning, yeah, of course there's social inequality. That's just the natural consequence of having an economy where people are rewarded for what they do or don't do. And, yeah, there's even some unfairness there, that there may be a poor drawing in the social lottery. But then you have opportunity to correct that throughout your life, and that's what you work on and so on. So conservatives, and I'm not saying I agree with all of that now, but I would, in most circles, in almost all circles, I'd be considered a conservative, probably a radical conservative in most circles. But anyway, that language is identifying people who are generally more likely to accept social inequality and are more resistant to social change, to progressive arguments for social change especially. On the other side of the right, still on the right, are the neoliberals. And this is where I normally put myself in the category when I'm doing episodes like this. Neoliberal, meaning, you know, basically what I have always meant by libertarian. Specifically, this is how they identify the neoliberal group with these different categories. So specifically, to assess a neoliberal depiction of IO psychology research, they said, the following five items, that's IO, I think, is industrial occupational or industrial organizational, something like that. Yeah, it's industrial organizational psychology research. The following five items, this is what identified someone as neoliberal, representing political values were presented. Here they are. Private ownership of the means of production and distribution, competition, accumulation of profit, free trade, and then the deregulation of markets. And, you know, just right down the road of what I think most libertarians would argue for, or in this case, we're going to call them neoliberals. So both of those groups are on the right. And I have to identify them separately because even though they're both in the right political, and I don't mean correct, I mean right-leaning political spectrum, they are very different ideologies, and they've become more and more distinct over the last 40 years or so. So that's a discussion for another episode, and we've done it in some other episodes. On the left, when we're talking about basic orientation, so if I'm talking about these groups on the left, you know, the groups that we would identify as progressives or socialists or communists or, you know, whatever language you want to put on it, it would be like this, to assess this left-wing depiction of IO psychology research. Here are the items that were listed. Public ownership of the means of production and distribution. That is, you value that the public should have a right to own the means of production and distribution. Economic equality, not inequality. Economic equality becomes a priority. Social welfare is a priority. Controlled trade, which is ironic, isn't it, because of the way, you know, trade wars are taking place right now under the aegis of conservatism. But this is slightly different than that. Controlled trade, meaning the government wants a hand in everything that has to do with trade. It's not completely different. Don't get me wrong. There's some weirdness going on with people calling themselves conservatives and doing some of the stuff they're doing right now. But that one's tricky. But anyway, free trade and then the deregulation of market. Oh, I'm sorry. I was back up under the neoliberal list because I was talking about trade. So controlled trade and then economic planning. So again, the list is public ownership of the means of production and distribution, economic equality, social welfare, controlled trade, and then economic planning. That seems to be the thrust of the sort of political ideologies that are attached to a left-leaning political orientation. At least in this study, that's how they characterized the difference in those two things. Okay, so now you have a sense of the categories of political orientation that we're talking about with some of the nuances that might lie underneath it. Then there are the places where people work or the occupations that people occupy where that political orientation might or might not fit quite as well. So when we're talking about occupational biases, there are a few terms that I want you to have in mind as well, including the terms occupational and biases. You know, by occupational, I mean you identify yourself with people who do similar things, who are in a certain occupation or a certain kind of field or something along those lines. So there's occupation. And then biases, again, not meaning something evil, just meaning, well, a lot of professors lean left. You know, that's a common observation about higher education, that there are more on the progressive socialist communist or whatever left-leaning side than there are, say, among mid-level managers in business. There is a difference in the political bias that's present in those distinct occupations. Maybe it's because of the specific content of the occupation, maybe not. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there are differences. So there are all kinds of political biases that are associated with our work. There could be political biases in the workplace itself. And again, the bias could be a neoliberal bias, like we're libertarian here, we're all about individualism, free trade, and blah, blah, blah. There could be a left-wing bias. Well, we believe in social justice and making everything right for everyone, and we want the government to have more regulation, blah, blah, blah. And that's the normal conversation around the water cooler, for instance. It could be politically pluralistic, like in our workplace, we expect there to be a respect for all the different political views that are out there. And we prioritize having open and civil conversations about all of these things. Or it could be politically neutral. Hey, we don't talk about politics around here. We're just trying to get the widgets on the thingies, you know. Let's just get them out the door, okay? Don't bring that up. We're going to get back to work. Let's get it all out the door, all right? So you could be a politically neutral workplace. You could be neutral and not be a redneck and not be saying it like I said it also. Anyway, the point is you've got all of these different biases that could be predominant in a given workplace. That could be true as well about certain occupations, like I said a minute ago. And the reason that happens is it's worth mentioning. I'll put it that way. It's worth mentioning because it shapes the way we might need to respond to the misfits that we could come to in this case. And, you know, if you wonder why on earth are we talking about all this work and political bias kind of stuff in this conversation, because our identities can be very strongly wrapped up in both of those areas, in each of those areas. And if there's a conflict between the two, it could have serious consequences on your own, you know, in a purely psychological sense, I would just say in your own well-being, in your own sense of well-being and your identification. But in terms of how you fit into the world and how you're representing who you are in this world as a Christian, for instance, that's affected by how you think you fit into the world and whether you take a combative or conciliatory or leading or submitting or whatever role in that occupation, for instance, or in your social setting where you're expressing your political preferences, and how important you consider your occupation to your social situation. So obviously it affects us significantly as individuals. So anyway, in occupations, there can be some of these political biases as well. And sometimes that's because the people who are attracted to that occupation may just be inclined toward, for instance, a liberal bent. The people who are in the occupations that we identify with art, you know, well, he's an artist of this kind or that kind. It wouldn't shock us. And I did not do the research to find out whether this is literally true or not, or what the statistical verification for this idea is. But it would be shocking, you know, if it didn't turn out to be this way, that we would sort of expect artists to have a liberal bent. And I'm not even thinking of individual artists. Well, I know this one and that one, and they're just radical leftists. I don't mean that. I just mean you wouldn't expect an artist very often. Now, sometimes you would, but you wouldn't expect an artist very often to say to himself, oh, now what can I do to keep the lines exactly where they are right now, to make sure and color inside the boundaries that everybody else has set up for me? You know, the whole nature of creativity is that you're doing things outside the bounds of what most other people have thought in one way or another. That doesn't mean you have to cross all the boundaries, and it doesn't mean you have to abandon every value that you have. But it might be in the nature of being an artist, that occupational world, to be more left-leaning or more progressive or at least less conservative. By the way, when I was saying, well, there are certainly exceptions, even abstractly and theoretically, the way I'm presenting it right now, even abstractly and theoretically, you would expect if the world of artists, the occupational world of artists, were filled with, say, progressives and liberals and thinkers that are outside the box and coloring outside the lines, you would expect somebody creative in that setting to say, watch what I can do inside the lines and watch how I can show that I'm creative as a reaction to all the creatives who are outside the lines. Of course you would expect that. And I think that would be creative and it would be a good thing. I'm not placing a value on one side or the other. I'm simply saying it's not surprising that some occupations would attract a certain kind of individuals who have a commitment to a certain kind of vocation or calling, you know, in their life. And it could be the same on the conservative side. For those who have as a priority in their way of thinking about a career and the interest that they have personally, let's say their priority is advancing, that, you know, that like you really have this sense, this strong sense of ambition. And I not only know people like that, I was like that when I was young. I would even tell my friends, I don't know, I have this driving ambition. I need to do stuff. I need to get stuff done. I think there is, in any mindset that would be ambitious, maybe a tendency to work within the structures, not to stay within them, but to sort of drag them forward with you, but to work within the structures that exist and to work within those structures in a way that would gain you advancement, not even just selfishly. You don't have to be a selfish pig to do this. You just have to be a person who's trying to move forward, and moving forward in the current structures means also respecting those structures. It doesn't do much good. Like, I mean, just think about the degrees that I got in the educational world. It doesn't do much good to get a bunch of degrees and then have the educational world turned on its head because the categories don't matter anymore, because in your progressive push, you undermine all the institutions that created that setting within which you progressed. That, I'm saying to you, would make sense of saying that some fields like finance and business and even education would attract people who might be more conservative. I know what you're saying to yourself, but education attracts liberals. Yeah, I mean, you think of liberals that way because we're talking about political ideology. But in the overall nature of things, a lot of the people who are attracted to the world of education are the most bureaucratic people you've ever met in your life. They are about preserving the institutions as they exist right now. In fact, there's a, I don't think it's entirely derogatory, but it's a really common term in educational parlance of educrat. You know, we call certain people educrats. And that's what we mean by it, that they're trying to conserve the current milieu. So you could see, you can see what I mean, that if a political ideology of conservatism would align with an institutional or industrial conservatism as well. That is, that the finance industry, for instance, depends on the marketplaces being run the same way in 20 years that they are right now for me to be able to advance, then a person might be attracted to that career. Okay, too much time on that. The point is that in occupations, it might just attract certain people to that kind of occupation who have a political ideology that's similar to other people who are attracted to that occupation. It could be true of organizations simply because the leaders actually, you know, making decisions, the decision makers in an organization have a particular political inclination, and they just either are or aren't inclined to hire certain people who agree or don't agree with them. You can understand why that would be the case, why an organization would come to reflect the values of the people who are deciding who works there and doesn't work there. And by the way, it can also be said not just about the places where people work that there is a political bias, but about the employees themselves, that that, you know, like I was talking about with ambitious people pursuing careers in finance, for example, or people with certain bents or biases being reinforced by the nature of the work itself. This is one of the things that was apparent in this study that I was reading that I referred to that you can look up, that, that Daisy will give you the link to on the website, that this certain survey refers to a European social survey that showed that people's work experiences play an important role, I'm quoting, in shaping their political orientation because, due to generalization and transposition processes, people tend to apply the same reasoning and problem-solving behaviors that they learn and use at work to the political domain. And that's just because that's how the human mind works. Hey, I learned how to do this at work. Now I'm going to apply it to this political problem that I'm trying to solve as I'm listening to all these politicians tell me how I ought to do things. If you're, I'll give you a simplified example, and again, not one with research behind it, just commonsensically or theoretically. If your job is to be a public defender and you identify with it, and I know there are other ways that people are public defenders, but let's just say that was your actual job. You're a public defender and you identify with that, like that I'm proud to be a public defender. Then you might grow to develop a sense of injustice on behalf of certain demographics of people you represent on a regular basis because of the job that you have, the reinforcement that has to come because you're constantly creating arguments to make this case for people who you think are being underserved or underrepresented in the criminal justice system. On the other hand, if your job is mid-level management and you identify with that, like, I love managing people and I love the fact that sometimes the people I'm managing, they really get it and they apply themselves and they succeed and I watch them go on. And that's the pride of my life, being able to manage people like that. If your job is mid-level management and you were to identify it, you might develop a stronger sense of the importance of personal responsibility and reward. You know, like, let's get out. You work hard, you're going to get rewarded, you're going to get it. And you can hear that being associated commonly with, it doesn't have to be all the time, but commonly with a more conservative political mindset as well. So here's the point I want to get to. If you have an occupation that you're involved in, a role that you're involved in, or even your workplace, a particular job that you occupy right now, and the inclination there is to the left, but you are much more inclined to the right, or if it's vice versa, either way, we'll call that a misfit, right? That's how they describe it in the article that I was talking about, or in the study that I was talking about. So we'll just call that a workplace misfit, that kind of you're out of place. You're a square peg in a round hole, or whatever, whichever one that's supposed to be, whichever way that expression is supposed to go. So it creates, you know, a contrast between the two. And if that's the case, if you're in an occupation that leans one direction and you go the other direction, does it, what problem does that create for you? And then how are you supposed to think about that? And, you know, the place where the biggest misfit takes place, or where at least the consequence of the misfit is most significant, is when you have someone who is, and this is based on what the study observed, and again, I'm not giving it as fine a nuance as they did, but this is the general idea, that for conservatives who found themselves, those who identify themselves as conservatives, not even neoliberals, but conservatives on the right end, who find themselves working in a more liberal workplace or identifying with a liberal occupation, that it was a greater misfit for them than for anyone else. Here, I'll read you the language. And they actually refer to another study, a prior study, that was more about the workplace and what happened with the level of turnover if there was a contrast between the workers' conservatism, as an example, and the workplace's liberalism, as the example. So Burmese and McDonald, that's the other study, found that turnover was more likely for employees who experienced a conservative misfit, meaning they're conservative in a liberal workplace, rather than a liberal misfit, obviously a liberal in a conservative workplace, with their organization's dominant political orientation. These findings were attributed to, these findings were attributed to differences between conservative and liberal people in terms of attitudes toward in-group, that is, those with the same political orientation, and out-group members, insiders and outsiders, you know, that kind of idea, those who have a different political orientation. Specifically, based on social psychological research on conservatism, and they reference some studies, Burmese and McDonald, this other study, argued that people with a conservative as compared to a liberal political orientation rely more, I'm just quoting the study, and I don't even think this is intended to be derogatory. It's just a statement about the nature of being more conservative. That people with a conservative as compared to a liberal political orientation rely more on a stereotyping and prejudgment, have higher rigidity and need for certainty, and show more intolerance and hostility toward out-group members. These psychological differences may have strengthened the effects of ideological misfit on withdrawal behavior among conservatives. If you're listening as a conservative, you know, and you're saying to yourself, well, that's pretty insulting to say we rely on stereotyping and prejudgment and we have higher rigidity and need for certainty. It can be. It could be insulting. It could be taken negatively. And honestly, as a conservative, we probably extend it negatively sometimes. We probably practice it negatively. But I mean, it is sort of built into the nature of the term. We observe the way things are and want to keep them that way. And it's specific about political things. Everybody has some things they want to keep the way they are. But we're talking about political things right now. And so it would make sense that if we have categories that we don't want to change, that people who look at a conservative would say, well, I think you're pretty rigid in your way of seeing the world. We probably are. You know, that probably makes sense. But because of that, you can see why that would lead to a conservative in a liberal workplace feeling like they were being forced to compromise in ways that they're not comfortable with, or suppress ideas that they want to express pretty sharply, pretty starkly, having to hedge it, having to soften it in ways that make them feel disingenuous, dishonest. And more importantly, and this is what this study was about, more importantly, making them say, man, I'm just not like the rest of the people who are in my occupation. I'm just not like them. And as weird as it sounds, that's fairly important to us. We like to be able to say, I'm like the other people, either that I work with, if I don't want to identify my career as part of my identity, then I look at the other people I work with and I say, but man, I love working with this team. I love having an identity in the workplace that allows me to fulfill the things, you know, whatever. If not that, then we love the idea of being able to say, yeah, well, I'm a preacher, or I'm a professor, or I'm a, you know, I don't know, a politician. And I know I'm choosing some terms that are practically pejorative now, but in a real sense, there is a pride, I don't mean this as individualistic, selfish pride. I mean there is a pride of belonging that goes with being a part of an occupation when you're willing to identify with it. And if your political ideology seems inherently distinct from the general political ideology of that occupation, then you might be less willing to identify with it. In fact, that can be so strong. Here's one of the things the study observed that I thought was interesting, and particularly in the case of conservatives in this case, who found themselves in a position where they were evaluating an occupation that they hold as conservatives, but were being told was more liberal than that. And that's part of the manipulation of this study. I'm using their own language for what they did, manipulate the circumstance. Part of the manipulation of the study was to say that the political ideology of psychologists who work in organizational and industrial psychology tend to be more liberal. That's part of the manipulation of the study. So they fed that information to the participants in the study. And you know who they got resistance from when they said that? The conservative participants in the study. I mean, like, angry resistance from them. Well, that's just not true. That's just not the case. Not because there was a fact-based reasoning against that case, but because they did not like the idea of their self-identity with the occupation being threatened by the occupation having a different ideology than they had. I'm going to read you the paragraph. It's a substantial paragraph, but I think it's worth reading real quickly. Thus, even though more conservative IO psychologists had a lower sense of emotional belonging to their occupation because they were being told it was a liberal, you know, field or whatever, they had lower self-investment, when the field was depicted as having a left-wing bias, they did not perceive themselves as less similar to a prototypical IO psychologist. That is, their self-definition was not significantly lower. A potential explanation for these differential findings, the study says, a potential explanation for the two dimensions of occupational identification may be that more conservative IO psychologists generally conceive the prototypical or ideal IO psychologist as being politically more conservative, and therefore their self-definition may not have been affected by the experimental manipulation, saying that it was a more liberal field. This may also explain more conservative IO psychologists' negative emotional reaction in terms of self-investment to our depiction of the field as having a left-wing bias. The undercurrent to that sentence is, man, we would say it to some guys, and they'd be like, no, it isn't. That's just dumb. It's not conservative. It's not liberal. And it makes sense that if your identity's wrapped up in both your political ideology and your occupation, then being told suddenly that your occupation doesn't share your political ideology could create a disjointed sense of identity and a little discomfort, and therefore a reason to reject that idea. The same thing can happen with liberals in a conservative occupational environment, and I guarantee it does. It happens, and there are people who find themselves in that an unenviable position of discomfort, but it's not at the same level. In this study, it was found that it was for the conservatives that the need to withdraw from identifying with an occupation or to withdraw to have turnover in the workplace itself was the greatest, which is an interesting thing. So the effects of that misfit turn out to be that, you know, if you look at it from a corporate perspective, if there's a misfit between your political ideology and the workplace or the organization or whatever, the corporation or whatever, at a corporate level, there's lower hireability. I mean, odds are you're going to go through an interview and, you know, at the point where nobody has to hire you, they have their best chance to say, yeah, I just wasn't quite comfortable with it, so I'm not going to hire them. So there's that. But then there's also higher turnover, even in that position where you've already invested in a person and you want to keep them on, or you've already invested in a job and you want to stay there. There's more likelihood that you're going to say, I need to leave. Or they're going to say, you know, this just isn't a good fit. We need to change our position here. If there's a disagreement between political ideology in the individual and the bias that's being presented in that corporate setting, or even in this case, occupational setting. From the personal perspective, I think it's even a little more disconcerting. It could be that there's just lower occupational well-being. And I'm not just trying to be fluffy about this. Work is a huge part of our lives. And if going to work every day is nothing but stress, you know, I remember ages ago reading a study about how most heart attacks happen on Monday morning. Because people are thinking about going to work, it seems obvious, is why. Yeah, that's a terrible thing for people to dread the most significant portion of what they give their lives to every day. And I just mean time-wise, the most significant portion of what they're giving their lives to. And also a lower occupational identification, which I think matters. Meaning a less of a sense of saying, oh, I'm so proud to be this or that, or to be working for this organization or that organization, or to be this kind of a professional or that kind of professional. And why would that matter to us? So, you know, recently I've heard what I consider reasonable talk from a lot of sources about how how things have changed because we now, in the modern period, in the contemporary period, we want our careers to have a purpose rather than simply needing to make a living or, you know, finding your purpose outside of work. What you really want to do is just get a paycheck, you know. Even a couple of years ago, you'll remember this coming about because it was such a priority or celebrity kind of event. You'll remember a couple of years ago, President Obama had a Netflix series that came out on working, the thing we do all day or something like that. I can't remember the exact title. On Netflix. I didn't watch it, but I heard a lot about it, and I read some things about it. And I remember an interview that he did with Ira Glass, you know, on I saw it on LinkedIn. I'm not sure if it was on PBS or something else where it came out originally. But Ira Glass did this interview with him about working, and he talks about something I heard him say many times in association with this working documentary, that his mother, his grandparents, who he grew up with, didn't work for the sake of satisfaction. They didn't work to fulfill their purpose. They worked because they needed to make a living. It was, you know, you got to have a paycheck. And the idea that you would work to find satisfaction in it is something that's come up more recently. But I think it's important that there's validity to that. There's nothing wrong with that. It is okay to work in order to make a living. Not just okay, it's important to work to make a living. And that's important to the economy. It's an important part of the pressure society puts on us to make us good parts, good citizens, you know, good parts of a society. So I'm fine with that. We accept that. And then we find satisfaction and purpose and all that kind of stuff in other things that are outside of work, in family. It's why people talk about work-life balance. But we also love the idea of finding the job, you know, that fulfills a meaningful purpose in our lives. It seems important. I won't expand on this right now the way I want to, and believe me, I want to. I got a lot of notes in front of me that want me to do it again. But in the context of the human condition, you know, that book by Hannah Arendt that I talked about not long ago, the idea of laboring, you know, can be meaningful and purposive. Landscaping, road work, IT maintenance can all be meaningful and purposeful parts of the life of a human being who has to labor, who has to be a part of the whole productive system of existence, but also working and applying a craft and making a product. And the fact that we create things that persist in the world and that people move around in their lives. I wish I had time to talk about the way buildings do that, that when people talk about building something, when we built a dorm here, that we think of it as a piece of furniture in the world now that shaped the world and how that can change. We don't have time to talk about all of that. But that last part is usually the only thing we're thinking of where there's real purpose involved in the workplace, and that's the acting. Remember laboring, working, and then acting, how those are different categories of human being. And the acting part is where we're directly affecting what other people do. We're directly affecting other people's actions, actually. For me, you know, preaching, leading a church, leading in a classroom for the last 25, 26 years, leading a college for the last 11 years is acting. I mean, I'm having a direct impact on people's lives constantly in the workplace, but also hopefully ideologically outside the workplace. That's the goal. It's the same for someone who's writing or counseling or acting, and I mean literally acting, like performing on a stage, or doing journalism, or being a thought provoker, someone who's going in and doing consulting or giving advising or having the main input to something or whatever. There are a billion ways your job could be acting so that you're directly affecting other people as a part of your job. We're acting all the time in our lives on other people that has a direct influence on them and therefore gives purpose and meaning to our lives in addition to everything else we're doing. That's always the case. That's not about the workplace. I'm saying even having a job that does that is part of what some of us are pursuing at different times. And when you, but here's the thing I want to get at. When you have an occupational identity, when you're able to say, hey, I work at Criswell College, and I'm not trying to pick my college, this is where I work. I work at Criswell College. And your response to that statement internally, psychologically, emotionally, your response to that statement is a feeling of warmth. Oh, I'm a part of what Criswell College is doing. Then at whatever level your work is, it's because I'm doing the landscaping, it's because I'm, you know, leading from the executive office branch, it's because I'm teaching in the classroom, it's because I'm walking around with a guest and showing them rooms or whatever, whether it is labor or work or action that you're participating in those categories we were talking about a moment ago, you have a sense of purpose and satisfaction, not because of the specific task that you're doing in the moment, but because you find a significant part of your identity in that workplace. And that's not a bad, that's a beautiful thing. That's a good thing. It's the same thing with the occupation. If you can say, Daisy, who's sitting across the table from me, she's the producer in the program. I mean, I don't even know why I say that. Everybody likes her better than me anyway. It's like, oh, why isn't Daisy talking more? I don't know. And I don't know why you keep harassing me about this. Anyway, let's just get back to the conversation. Daisy, who's sitting across the table from me, she's a counselor among other things that she does, plenty of other things that she does. She is a counselor. So there's a certain amount of pride in that. And I've never heard her say it. I'm not saying that she pursues this. I'm saying from the perspective of someone who's in that discipline and they say, oh, that's what I do. I don't even know that she would say that because it's a minor part of what she does right now. But as a licensed counselor, there is a certain identification with other counselors that you have. And if you can identify with that occupation, oh, I'm a counselor and I really like to identify with those counselors. But if you viewed that occupation as being politically or in any other way ideologically opposite you, you would have a tendency to want to apologize for being a counselor. Well, I mean, I do counseling, but I'm not one of those counselors, you know. And you would lose then the satisfaction that would come with the purpose that you can't fulfill on your own by yourself, but that corporately you sort of get to share in when you're a part of that occupation. There is something beneficial communally about identifying with, you know, the group, so to speak. So it's possible even to find satisfaction in all three of those layers. Because our sense of belonging to a community allows our work to be a part of what's happening at all three levels of that existence. So anyway, I want to get to the conclusion here and what I'm actually suggesting to get to the point. This is because, you know, since 2016, and I don't care what you blame it on. I don't care if you think it's because of just that one election cycle or one politician or the reality that our culture is just producing this. This is the direction our culture has gone, that we have become more polarized and more divisive. And in some contexts, we've suppressed our expression of that. And in other contexts, we have multiplied our expression of it inexplicably. Anyway, regardless of which way you think it has happened, whether you think it's good, bad, or indifferent, wherever you think it's going, the reality is a lot of us find ourselves in a workplace where we have a divergence of views. And if that divergence is expressed in terms of a majority view that's opposed to our view, then it can create some tension that somehow or another you have to address. Eventually, you're going to address it. The question is, are you going to address it intentionally or not? And so what I'm not suggesting is this, that if you don't share a political orientation with your boss or with your workplace as a whole or with your industry or with your occupation, then you just ought to go somewhere else. That's not what I'm saying. Well, you can't be that because you disagree with them and you're never going to feel comfortable there. That's not what I'm getting at. Nor am I saying that you have to, work as an evangelist for your political orientation in your workplace or within your occupation. You're going to change those people's minds, or you have to be a subversive element within that discipline. That's not what this is about. That's not my goal. It's not even that if you do share their view, then the whole satisfaction of your life can be found in the fact that you're one of them, that you have something with them. That's not what I'm saying at all. There is a benefit that comes with that, but that's not the point. What I am suggesting is this, that you have an awareness, that not just maintain, but create an awareness of your own sense of belonging or lack of sense of belonging in your workplace. How much satisfaction is there? How much stress are you carrying there? All that kind of stuff. Because sometimes just finding or identifying, in my experience, and again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm just telling you what I gleaned from reading this study and from my own experience of these things over the last few years. Sometimes just finding or identifying your source of stress can make a difference. I mean, you can, like let's say there was a misfit there that you realized, oh, that's why, because I can't speak openly at the office, and I feel like my mouth is duct taped shut all day long. Then you can look for solutions and a better work-life balance, or maybe having more communication or different communication, or maybe just better communication, maybe just more intentional communication with other people who are in your workplace. But at least you can begin to address it. You can have just more intentionality about your labor or work or actions. Either decide that it really is sufficient that you're able to work and reap the benefit of income and stability and productivity and all that kind of stuff that comes from just working. Either you decide that's enough, or you decide that something really does need to change, but just be intentional about it. And if you're intentional about it, I mean, you would ask yourself questions like, well, do you need a workplace where you can get along politically with your coworkers? I mean, obviously, I'm using the word get along there vaguely. Does that mean you have to agree politically in order to get along politically? Or could you disagree but civilly? And if that's the case, could you have some conversations with some people and say, is it possible for us to have civil conversations about this? Or should I just keep my mouth shut about it? Or just can we be congenial about it and disagree? Or does it always have to become hostile? Do you need do you even care? Do you need an occupation where your political ideas fit in without constantly having to explain yourself all the time? And I'm saying this about not just about the workplace. I'm saying it about your occupation. Like when you say, hey, I'm a Baptist preacher, and then have to apologize for it. Well, yeah, but I'm not one of those. If that's the case, do you need to rethink what you're doing or who you are? Or is that good for you? Does that allow you to be the John the Baptist? I'm a Baptist preacher, but like John was a Baptist, in that sense. So that's one thing, intentionality about your work. Secondly, and I'm almost done, intentionality about your coworkers. This is maybe the most important thing I'll say in this whole thing. It's not just about you. It never is. It's always about you understanding yourself better so that you can then understand others better as well. Take the outsider in your office into account when you're palling around with the people you already agree with. Especially if you're a boss, the people you assume you agree with you, take into consideration that they may actually have a different view than you do. And that environment you create, and believe me, I'm preaching to myself. As a boss, as a president here, I realize how uncomfortable I can make the environment for people because they aren't in a position of power to stand up and say something to me about it. And I need to be intentional about taking into consideration where they are. Not just because I need to compromise my political ideology. That's not what it's about. But the mission that we have, the work that we do together, their wholeness in part can be benefited by feeling a part of what we do as a team together. And I don't need to crush that or suppress that. And why would I want to? We're better when we're working together. So anyway, in saying all of that, I'm saying in just such a way, by doing that, by being aware and intentional, not only about our own work, but about our coworkers, in just such a way, we might find ourselves capable not only of weaving our labor and our work and our workplace and our occupation into a more satisfying, rewarding, or at least tolerable daily existence, but also of being in our workplace, being in our working selves, something more like a person who can serve, not just for the sake of what others think about us, for which they will reward us, you know, with a paycheck, but literally, in the expression of the New Testament, as unto the Lord, as unto the purpose for which we were created. So as you do this, or in the meantime, I just hope good things from God hunt you down this week.
Thanks for joining us for Coffee with Creamer. Your cup of coffee may be finished, but we are not. Come back next week for a refill as we sit down to examine a new set of ideas and cultural issues. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or visit our website at barrycreamer.com. Until next time, keep your mug hot and your mind sharp.